Welcome to Solutions for Higher Education, a podcast by Scott L. Wyatt, president of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. To subscribe to this podcast, please visit www.suu.edu/presidentspodcast, where you will find both the audio and a written transcript for today's podcast. Hi again, everyone, and welcome to Solutions for Higher Education, a podcast featuring Scott L. Wyatt, the president of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. I'm your host, Steve Meredith, and joining me today, as he always does, is my good friend, President Wyatt.
Well, thanks, Steve. It's good to be here with you, and it's a gorgeous day outside, and we've got a very interesting guest.
We do. And in a part of our ongoing series of podcasts about innovation, one of the things that we look around for are people from the outside who can help point us the way towards innovative practices and things that we may not be paying as much attention to as we should be. And today is one of those guests, a guest from far away joining us by the phone.
Welcome, Marty Vanderwerf. You are the Associate Director for the Georgetown Center on Education and the Workforce. And we're visiting with you from your office at Georgetown, I think.
Yes, you are. It's a beautiful day here as well. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why don't we start this out by acquainting our listeners to the Georgetown Center?
So the Georgetown Center is about 10 years old, and it kind of has pioneered a path of looking at value of university credentials. So we started telling people how much a person who gets a bachelor's degree in, say, nursing makes as opposed to a person who gets a bachelor's degree in business or electrical engineering or history. It's an area of study that we thought was important, mostly because we think it's important to consumers. We think that in this day and age when college is so expensive and often students take out loans in order to go to college, that they have an understanding of what the return on investment might be. So we started publishing that research. It's probably what we're best known for. But we also do a lot of other research around equity in higher education, around trends in the workforce and how certain post-secondary credentials pay off in the workforce. We also have done a lot of work looking at different submarkets within the workforce, like the workforce for people who have less than a bachelor's degree but more than a high school diploma.
So I use a lot of your data regularly. And one thing, in fact, this time of year, I do a circuit through some of the local high schools and get up and talk to them about why they should go to college. And I put up your data and show them this is how much money you can expect to earn if you do this or this or this or the other thing. And the end of my story is you really should go to college. Get a good degree.
Yeah, you know, so if you think about the history of the country, and you don't have to go back that far, but 1980, a huge proportion of the workforce had no more than a high school diploma. And that was fine. We were a manufacturing economy then, and you could get a good family-sustaining job at a factory just about anywhere in the United States and make a good living. And that really began to change in the 1980s. And we, ever since then, have become a country whose economy is more and more focused on employees who have at least some post-secondary credentials. And that doesn't always have to be a bachelor's degree. It can be a certificate, it can be a license, it can be an associate's degree. All of those things have value in the workforce. But we've reached a point in this country where only about 20% of all good jobs, and those are jobs that pay at least $35,000 a year, only about 20% of them go to people with no more than a high school diploma.
That's a small number. I think some of the data that I have seen relative to the creation of jobs or the loss of jobs since the end of the Great Recession or the start of the Great Recession, 2008, shows that we've lost, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it seems like it's something like 5.5 million jobs in this country for those that have a high school diploma or less.
Yeah. I think it was even greater than that. And, you know, in the recovery from the recession to almost on net, almost every job that was created was going to somebody with at least some college education. The recovery for high school educated workers was very, very slow.
Yeah. And we find ourselves 10 years after that with less jobs in this country for those with a high school diploma, a little bit more for certificates and associate degrees, and most of the growth is bachelor's degree and higher. Is that the way you see it?
That has been where most of the growth has been, especially if you look at what a category that we like to call good jobs. And, you know, and the data that I have, I was looking back at some data from 1991 compared to 2016. At that point in 1991, when you looked at the good jobs, they were almost evenly divided between people with a bachelor's degree, people with a high school diploma, and people with a credential in between. And in the 25 years since then, the number of good jobs for people with a bachelor's degree have doubled. The number of good jobs for people with a high school diploma or less has decreased. And the number of good jobs for people with what we call middle skills, that is between high school and a bachelor's degree, has increased by about 25%, but it's still a pretty low number. It's about 15.7 million jobs for people in that category. That's not small change, but it compares to the 36 million good jobs for people who have a bachelor's degree.
So here's a question about this. If we were to go back 25 years or 30 years, the perception of the need for higher education as it relates to a job versus the perception of higher education for the sake of personal wellness and learning, education for the sake of earning, have you seen a change in the perception or the expectations for a degree?
Yeah, you know, I always think about it this way, and I think you're absolutely right, first of all. But, you know, when I think about the economy of, say, the 1970s, and I'll get back to 25 years ago, but when I think about it in the 1970s, when we were very much more a manufacturing economy, if you had a college degree, the expectation is that you were the boss. You could expect that you would be managing the place. You know, now at a manufacturing plant, you might need a bachelor's degree just to operate the machinery. So that's how much it's really changed. About 25 years ago, I think that you're right. The perception was that college was primarily a place to enrich yourself and to explore possibilities for what you could be in this economy and in this country. Now it's become, a college degree has become almost a necessary ticket to get a middle-class job. And so I think that the way people perceive it has gone from, oh, that would be really enriching and it's really an extra to my life, to become something that's absolutely necessary to my life. And when something like that changes, then what people are expecting to get out of college changes as well.
How do we respond to that?
Yeah, or have we? Yeah, I wonder if we're still... if we're not still locked back in that older mindset a little bit in higher ed.
Well, I think that every student who's coming to your college and coming to every other college, one of the first things they have on their mind is how is this going to help me get a job? How am I going to be able to, you know, turn this into the sort of career that I envision for myself? And so, whereas 25 years ago, people might have said, I'm just exploring, I'm wondering about how this might apply to something I would like to do, or at least try and see if I'm interested in it. Today, there's very much a straight line thought that's going through people's heads that this has got to work out for me because I don't have a plan B.
Yeah. We do surveys of our students when they come in and ask them, what is the number one reason why you're coming? And it's almost 100% that say I'm coming because I want to get a job or I want to make more money. And that was that the same way 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago?
If you look at the surveys from back then, the number one response would be typically, why are you going to college? And typically the answer would be to learn, to get educated in an area I didn't know about. To get a job would be number two probably back then, but that's changed dramatically. You just don't find that many people anymore with the luxury of saying, I'd like to spend 4 years just learning and figuring out my path. There's a lot more pressure on people to sort of know from the beginning what it is that they want to do. And if they don't know at the very beginning, to know after, say, 1 year, because, you know, among other things, the cost of college is so much greater than it was 25 years ago. Back then, you know, you could go, you could explore, you could, you know, if you took a year off when you went back, the cost in relative terms was still pretty low. Now you just don't feel like you got that luxury anymore. You might have taken out a loan. You might have had to take on a job to help you pay for your school costs. And you just, you feel like, I think you feel a lot more pressure to just finish and know what you want to do and get to that degree. And that degree in itself becomes the goal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, most of the faculty at Southern Utah University are thinking careers for their students. But
yeah.
But of course, there are always at every university and college, some faculty and staff members who are still hoping that the students aren't thinking about a job. They're just thinking about learning for the sake of learning, learning for the sake of enriching their lives. And maybe partly that's good and we're happy that people are still hanging on to that. And partly it's a holdover from the good old days that are past.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that learning for the sake of learning is fantastic. And frankly, if you're looking at a student who is an undergraduate coming right out of high school, they're at a pretty tender age where they don't know a lot about their potential. They're just beginning to know that. In colleges today, though, the average student is older, and so the equation of going to college has become even more transactional. So I'm 26 and I've got 60 college credits, but I really can't turn it into anything. So I need to figure out a path and I want to spend as little time as I can getting through that path. And so there needs to be something in these classes I'm taking that unlocks potential for me. So that is the reality of what's going on. I think for some faculty members, certainly you want to have some students who are just becoming self-actualized and who are just beginning to learn about topics that they've never considered before. There is room for that. And frankly, part of higher education, an important part of higher education, is general education, the core liberal arts curriculum, where you actually learn a lot of the skills that are important to employers, like, you know, working in teams, oral and written communication, critical thinking, all of these things that employers say are important. Those should be part of a good, solid post-secondary education. But as the world has sped up, I think it's harder and harder for young students to understand that this process I'm going through need not have at every minute of the day a means to an end. Sometimes it's just for the pleasure of learning. And actually, through that pleasure of learning, I'm becoming a more complex, competent individual. You know, that's the difficulty that we're facing right now. A lot of people may want that to be the primary end of higher education. I think it's got to be a component of higher education, but the larger picture has to be that this is within the context of preparing this person to enter the workforce and get gainful employment.
Yeah, it's really kind of on us because we know that the students almost exclusively come. I mean, the number one reason for almost every single student is to get a job. So we know that's their goal. Yep. We need to serve that goal. We know that the legislature that funds us and everybody else is thinking of that same goal. But as they're coming through our school, it's up to us to help them feel inspired about learning for the sake of learning. So that's we can always find ways to sneak that in. But as long as we're continuing to help them, it seems to me that today, and I don't know this, it just anecdotally, it just feels to me that you can't see Steve and I. We're a lot younger than we look a lot younger than we sound.
We do?
Because you can't see. since you can't see our gray hair,
yeah.
I can tell you anything, right?
Yeah.
But it seems to me that when we were in college, versus the students that are in college today, it feels to me like they are more focused on relevance than maybe we were.
Yeah.
Relevance to a job.
And I went to college in the early 80s, so I'll date myself for all of our listeners. And I remember that when I was an undergraduate and I went to a college where there was this core liberal arts curriculum, and I was a journalism major, and I have to admit that I sort of chafed at it a little bit myself, thinking, what relevance does this have? And I think I only gained the perspective to understand what the relevance was pretty much after I graduated and began to think about some of the skills that I had learned and some of the ways that it taught me to reason once I got into the workplace. I don't know that I would have had that capacity for complexity if I hadn't taken those classes. But right. When you're taking them, it's really hard to understand what the relevance of it might be. And I think that it's pretty common for people to chafe at it. I would agree also, however, that today's students probably chafe at it even more because they want that. They want that, like I was saying before, they want that straight line. So what's the outcome going to be?
So you were in college in the early 80s. That puts you at about our age.
Yeah, you're not either. You're about, I started in, I think, 79, 78, actually. So, Marty, I worked for 25-plus years in the two-year college system, and there were lots of frustrating things about it. Not the least of which was that you never really got to see a person finish in the traditional sense. They would come in, transfer out quickly. But one of the things that I thought the two-year schools did quite well was they were pretty upfront about saying, this is an occupational program. It's straightforward. We're not going to burden you with a bunch of burden's the wrong word, but we're not going to place gen ed curriculum on top of this, or if it is, it's going to be limited. And then these are more traditional academic programs. The idea is that you are going to study those and then you're going to transfer to a university where you'll finish in that academic program. And I've often wondered if, particularly, as you say, where timelines now are much shorter. That was another great thing about the two-year school is that it typically was inexpensive enough that people could come in and float and not go into too much debt, just trying to figure out what they really wanted to do. But now where expense is high and time is of the essence for most of our students, even at a small regional university like we are that has relatively very low tuition, I've often wondered if it wouldn't be in our best interest to just simply say, these are primarily occupational programs, and these are primarily not occupational programs. They may lead you to a job, but it won't have as straight a line as perhaps this one will. And to identify them up front and a little bit more clearly, maybe using data of the type that you folks come up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those colleges that you're talking about, two-year colleges and small regional, you know, relatively non-selective public universities, are very important. They educate about 50% of all college students in this country. You know, we have this picture of college being young students going off to, you know, this, you know, kind of leafy green ivy covered campus, you know, and spending 4 years there. And of course, that's just really not the way it is anymore. It used to be that way, but it's not any longer. I think what we've done in this country is we spend too much time focusing on the elite colleges and not enough on the colleges that are really educating students. And places like your college and the two-year colleges are really the places where people are going to really get that entry, you know, into higher education. We don't fund them enough. We don't give them enough options. But I think what you're getting at, too, is very important, because another intimidating thing about that picture of college that I just painted is that when you're 30 years old and you really need to upskill in this workforce and you think about college, you think, well, that's not for me. I'm too old. That's for younger people. I didn't want to go at the time, so I guess I can't anymore. The fact of the matter is that college needs to be kind of a lifetime exploration point for a lot of people. We're all going to need in our careers to continue to upskill and get new credentials. And part of it is explaining to people that you can come to a two-year college and you can get out in 6 or 9 months with a credential that is actually going to have workplace value. I don't think a lot of people understand that. And I also don't think that colleges should be shy about explaining what the options are. We would like it, and you're going to do better if you get a higher credential. But if you only have the limited amount of time and the limited amount of money, there are things you can get out of the way in 6 or 9 months that actually will have value. And, you know, when I think about what we're doing as a higher education system, what we're hoping to do is to serve the public that needs this product. And so let's serve them at all kinds of different levels and not be shy about it.
Yeah, I had a very just a personal anecdote. One of the young women that cuts my hair here locally, I know, went to a short-term cosmetology school so that she can afford to come to SUU, where she wants to be a nurse. But it was very important for her to be able to have a job to pay for that. She's a single mother, has to have something that will support her and her family and allow her some childcare. And I think this is, as you suggest, this is much more the typical student these days than the atypical student.
Yeah. Yeah, and when we look at the data, and I understand your frustration with being at a two-year college and you don't get to see people finish, quote unquote. But the two-year college in this country has such an important role, because for many of the students who started a two-year college, they may never finish. The data shows that they are unlikely to ever get a bachelor's degree if they started a two-year college. But within that two-year college, they can get credentials. If you get an associate's degree in a technology-related area, chances are you're going to make more in your career than a lot of bachelor's degree holders. So these are important places that are producing people with real skills, and they're an important part of the infrastructure in higher education. If a person does start at a two-year college and then transfers to a place like Southern Utah, that is actually a very low-cost and intelligent way to get to the bachelor's degree, because you can do it within a local area and get to a degree that didn't cost you a ton of money and has real payoff at the end.
Yeah, so let's... What do you think, for those of us that are running colleges and universities in this country, what would you say the number one message we should take from the research that you've been doing at the Georgetown Center?
Well, I think that we are going to get into a situation in this country. I mean, I think we're already in a situation in this country where we're always going to have to be defending the cost of higher education. And you were saying that Southern Utah, that it's relatively low tuition institution, but probably for many of your students, it's still a very high price tag.
It's still money.
Yeah, it's still money in the end, and it's still it's opportunity cost among other things. I could be spending this money on other things. So if I'm going to spend it on this, what am I going to have to show for it at the end? And I think that is, although some people in higher education feel like it's kind of unsavory to talk about that equation. What's the return on investment and that sort of thing. I just think we've worked our way into a situation in this country with the cost of higher education and over $1 trillion in student loan debt that we should expect that our customers are going to have that question and that we need to have ready answers for them. And I think that rather than being a conversation that we would rather not have, it's a conversation we ought to be ready to have and happy to defend. And part of it is I think what you talk about when you go out to some of the local high schools and show data about why it's important that people go to college. It may not be the number one thing that every 18-year-old graduate of high school wants to do. They might have other things they want to do. They might want to work for a few years. They might want to join the military. They might want to, go out and backpack for a year or something like that.
Yeah, it may not be the highest thing.
It may not be the highest thing on their agenda, but eventually they probably need to find their way back. And so part of what I would say it would be the biggest takeaway from our research is the idea that in the end, if people want to have a family-sustaining income and a good job that is going to be productive, at some point in their lives, and it doesn't have to be when they're 18, they are going to need to invest in higher education. And that there are a bunch of different entry points, into higher education. I think we can't talk enough about these things. And I think, frankly, the way the economy is working, the way higher education is working, we're all going to have these discussions more and more going forward.
What if you were all of a sudden planted as the president of a public regional university? What would you do? Just based on what your perception is of the average, average university in this country, knowing the strengths and weaknesses, what would you do?
Differently.
Maybe. Differently.
Yeah.
In this country, we've got such a when you look at the geographic patterns of what's happening, you know, in this country, it differs so much from one part of the country to the other. So in Utah, one of the advantages that you have is that you're in an area of the country that's really growing. Put me in a regional college in Utah, I've got a whole different set of concerns than, say, one in, say, Pennsylvania, where population is at best flat, and maybe, depending on where I am, it's actually declining. What I would probably do, though, is I would want to talk with my faculty and talk with my administration and tell people that we're in the business of serving the needs of these students at whatever part of their lives they're in, that what they're looking for in coming to our institution is hope and inspiration. And it's and the act of enrolling in a college is one of the most aspirational financial transactions that anyone can ever make. And we need to keep that in mind every day when we're serving people on that campus. They came to us because they're thinking about the rest of their lives and what they can do with it. And so when they write that check, when they enroll, when they go to that first class, it's all about hope. It's all about what can I become when I am done going through this place? What will this place make of me? And we all need to invest in that investment that people are making. We all need to be part of that and remember why it is that they're coming to us.
That is a great line.
Yeah.
That inspires me, actually, because that is what we're doing. This is a great industry.
Yep.
This is the industry where we're, The product is the improvement of people's lives.
Yeah. And part of the product is hope and dreams and what people see in themselves that they want to improve. And for some people, it's sort of, how can I turn a corner? Or how can I, you know, unlock potential I think I have? Or how, and from a college perspective, is how can I introduce students to strengths and interests that they don't even know they have? You know, the exciting thing about higher education is being involved in that. You know, it's being involved in helping people become their best selves. And I think that's inspiring, I think, every day.
It is. It is really inspiring. Yep. It is a lot of fun, and it's to be able to... Both Steve and I teach a class. Steve teaches. Steve, you've taught for a long, long time.
Right. That's my faculty has been my primary assignment, actually, through most of my career.
And I just teach once a year, once every semester for a hobby, just to keep in connection with students. Yeah,
but it's gratifying, and it's why you keep doing it.
That's why
I keep doing
that's,
it. Yeah.
That's great. And I'm actually pursuing a master's degree right now at my advanced age because, you know, I hadn't been in the classroom in so long. And I just thought to myself, you know, I should go back. I should see what it's like. And so therefore, I'd have a little bit better platform to know what I was talking about.
Yeah, it's fun to be able to go back and do it when you're not thinking about anything other than I just want to learn.
I just want to learn. Yep.
Yeah.
and we appreciate it. But as we've been talking, almost everyone in the class is thinking, how do I improve my life and get a job and become self-sustaining and take care of a family or take care of me? And
We talked about this earlier, but there was that sort of sweet spot in the history of American higher education. And if you look back, you know, say 100 years, only about... the numbers are somewhere around 10 to 15% of people went to college. It was a very small number. And of course, that was almost exclusively, even 100 years ago, it was almost exclusively men. And it was primarily white men. And so if you think about that, how much it's changed, there were women going to college, but women didn't become didn't become college students in great numbers until well after World War II. And of course, nowadays, almost 60% of undergraduates are women. So that's changed dramatically.
That's right.
In the last 50 years, in the last 100 years. If you look at blacks and Latinos, college was unattainable for many black and Latino students. Nowadays, blacks and Latinos go to college in numbers proportionate to their percentage of the college age population. College has done a great job of reaching out to everybody. Everyone goes to college now in great numbers. Now, the graduation rates especially for blacks and Latinos, are not great. They're certainly not as high as they are for either whites or Asians. But the fact that they're enrolling and that they're finding opportunity in college, is really a fantastic achievement on behalf of the post-secondary community in this country. What we need to work on more now is identifying those students and seeing them through to graduation, because part of the mission, I think, of public colleges and universities is to serve all the members of the community and give everyone an opportunity. We're all, they're all part of the community. Everyone is paying taxes. Some people not as much as others, but we're all members of the community and we all need to be served equally. And so there's a lot of challenges, but higher education also has to look back and think we've had a lot of success. The fact that it's become a much more, democratic institution within this country is actually something to applaud. We have a lot more work to do, but we've made a lot of progress.
Yeah, and we talked a minute ago about the costs, and this is a fun statistic, and that is only 38% of our students end up borrowing money. The rest of them pay it with personal resources or family or grants or whatever it might be. But so 38% of our graduates leave with some student loan debt. And the average amount for those students is $16,000. So it's not that much debt. And then when we look at the data for the difference in Utah between the median salary for somebody who is a high school graduate only versus someone who has a bachelor's degree, the difference in median salary is about $16,000.
It's about that. It's about worth that.
It's almost exactly the same number.
Yeah. And the statistics you're quoting are just for Southern Utah, correct?
Right. For Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good statistic for us.
It's for the whole state, because we have students from all over the state that come here.
Right.
Yeah. We have students from all over the country that come here, but it's mostly Utah.
Right. Yeah, and it's great that Utah has actually been a state that's been able to keep down tuition costs, because tuition costs have really risen very quickly at a lot of other states around the country. In fact, on a percentage basis, tuition has been rising faster at public institutions than at private ones. And so even the best, quote-unquote low-cost alternative in most parts of the country has become pretty expensive. I think the average student loan debt now across the country, and this includes both publics and privates, for people getting out is now upwards of about $30,000. So Utah is significantly below that.
Yeah. Well, it has been a delight to visit with you. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
I hope your day continues well in Georgetown. My favorite restaurant, by the way, one of my favorite restaurants is in Georgetown.
What's that?
It's called Zed's.
And okay. It's an Ethiopian restaurant.
I love, every time I'm in Georgetown, I try to go there and eat with my fingers.
I know it. I know it. Well, thank you. I have to say, it's been a many years since I've been in Cedar City, but I'd love to come back at some point.
Well, come back. We'll treat you nice if you come back.
Thanks again for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Solutions for Higher Education, a podcast featuring Scott L. Wyatt, the president of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. We've had as our guest today Marty Vanderwerf, who is the associate director of the Center for Education and Workforce at Georgetown University. And we've been delighted to have him. And as always, we're delighted to have you as our listeners. We'll be back again soon. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Solutions for Higher Education. To subscribe to this podcast, please visit www.suu.edu/presidentspodcast, where you will find both the audio and a written transcript of today's podcast. The original music for this podcast was composed by Jack Barton, a master's degree student in music technology at SUU. For more information about Southern Utah University, please visit www.suu.edu.